mom wants her kids' science project to thrive. Too bad she hasn't cracked a science book since 1985.
A metathesis reaction?
Compounds, mixtures, and elements. Even this baking soda volcano is too big of an experiment. Whoa. Now she's completely forgotten the periodic table. Now she's burning a hole through the kitchen table.
Burning with science.
But her kids' love for their mom is truly transparent. Proof you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
Don't tell Dad.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
This is Chalk Talk.
Black 88! Black 88!
Football season is here, and the football talk never stops on Penguin Radio. We'll take a look at the NFL by reviewing some of last week's biggest matchups and moments from around the league, while also getting you ready for next Sunday.
Rodgers gets the snap. Blitz is on. Rodgers scrambles.
He's
left. Winds up. Rainbow.
He's got Cobb at the 10 to the 5.
Yes!
To the end zone. Touchdown.
We've got you covered on campus as well, as we will take a look at everything going on in the NCAA. From the rankings to some of last week's biggest upsets.
James, the lateral to the corner of the end zone. Can you believe that?
And now, radio.dominican.edu and Penguin Radio presents Chalk Talk. Here is your host, Jeff Safford.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to a third edition of Chalk Talk here on a Tuesday afternoon, October 6th, 2015. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. It's another beautiful day here on the Dominican campus and in Northern California in general. Don't we just all live in paradise, huh? Got a great show lined up for you this afternoon. We're going to lead off with the crazy weekend in college football that we watched last week. Four top 10 teams going down. The rankings are now completely different from what we have seen in previous weeks. Contenders were shown and pretenders were also shown in that week. So we'll talk all about that, and we'll also hit on some of the NFL topics in the second segment of our show. All the problems with kickers that has been going on this year, of all things. Kickers, will talk about the lucky Shamrock win that the Seahawks pulled off last night against Detroit, and a bunch of other things going on in the league. Maybe one thing about Odell Beckham Jr., what the Bills are saying about Odell Beckham, and we'll hit on some other things as well as we cruise along here on this Tuesday afternoon. So starting with the NCAA, man, what a crazy weekend that was. This season in general so far has been absolutely fantastic. If you're a fan of unpredictability, I feel sorry for anybody that's been betting on NCAA football. It's been probably a pretty tough bet, or a pretty good one if you're calling the right upsets. If anybody was calling that Florida game, but you could have made some money on that one. But I don't know if anybody may have seen it, but on Scott Van Pelt's show on ESPN, one of the segments he does is he looks at a game that ended with a bad thing for bettors. And the game he focused on this week was the game between Boise State and Hawaii. And Boise State was just completely creaming a Hawaii and completely screwed up the spread at the very end of the game. It's just cringeworthy. I won't give it away. I'll let you guys figure it out for yourselves and go watch it. But it is definitely very cringeworthy, and it's a whole different thing. But as I mentioned, four of the top 10 teams went down this weekend. UCLA went down, the number 7 team. Ole Miss, the number 3 team. Notre Dame, the number 6 team. And also Georgia, who I believe, they were ranked fifth in the rankings by my best measure, and they were actually favored to beat Alabama on Saturday, and I think Alabama might have been maybe a little bit angry about that, and they definitely had something to prove, and they came in there and came in between the hedges and really just destroyed Georgia, and really in similar fashion, the Florida Gators really dominated Ole Miss, and well, in both of those games, so you see this happen in college football, I don't want to say all the time, but you definitely see it sometimes in games like this, these big games, is one team has a bunch of plays go their way early, and then when it rains, it pours. And that's exactly what happened to both Ole Miss and Georgia on Saturday. They had a couple plays go against them, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, for the longest time that in the first half, the Georgia-Alabama game, it was pretty close. It was looked like it was going to be going 10-3 at the half, and then all of a sudden, boom, Alabama blocks a punt and scores a touchdown, and they're up 17-3, and then boom goes the dynamite again. They score before the half ends, and all of a sudden, everybody's looking around, and it's 24-3. And it was a similar situation with Florida, as Florida just got off to a great start in that ball game. You have to credit the Gators as well, as Greer looked awesome throwing the football on Saturday and had his best game as a starting quarterback. And for a program like Florida that's been looking to find a decent option at quarterback since this one guy, you may have heard of him, named Tim Tebow, was playing there. They've been basically looking for a replacement since then, and maybe they finally found a guy in Will Greer, the starter for the Florida Gators. And you look at all their skilled players around them. They're also playing well. They have a lot of young talent on that offense. And the Gators might be an interesting team to watch as this season plays on. They will have to face the LSU Tigers. That'll be an interesting matchup for them. And I believe they also play Alabama at some point this year as well. So definitely a lot of fun in the SEC, and you got to be thinking the Gators to be the favorite now in the SEC East. Everybody was kind of pointing at Georgia to be the favorite for that one early in the year, and with good reason. They had really looked good in their performances so far, but they just looked gnarly. And they have a tough one coming up this week, and going on the road to a place where it's really desperate for a win. Butch Jones and the Tennessee Volunteers, where they had that loss a couple weeks ago at Florida, where they are up 2 touchdowns and lost that game late. They were also up 2 touchdowns against Oklahoma about 3 weeks ago, and they dropped that one late as well. So it has definitely been some late losses for the Volunteers that have really hurt them so far in this season. And season that the Volunteers had some pretty good expectations, kind of looking to get back to where they had been, you know, the glory years with Peyton Manning and winning national titles with Philip Fulmer and all of that great history that the Volunteers had had previously, and it looked that they had some talent to do it, but 2-3 team to this point can definitely look, a win against a team like the Bulldogs would definitely help things out a bit, especially on your home field. I definitely think that that's a confidence boost when you can pick up a big win on your home field if you're a program that's struggling, because you can invigorate a fan base that way. You can get a fan base excited about winning again. And after that loss they had this past weekend against Arkansas, it just was evident that the fans just didn't have any trust in the Volunteers, that they were, you know, with even when they were still had a chance in the game and people were just leaving the stadium early just because they were so disgruntled. And you know, and when you're a fan base that's used to success, then it's hard to react to not succeeding sometimes. And, you know, we saw that with Oregon Duck fans a couple of weeks ago when they lost that horrible game at Utah. There, you know, even some sports writers were calling from the local Oregon area, were calling out Oregon fans, calling them, you know, crybabies and yada, yada, yada. But it was because the Oregon Ducks are just used to so much success over the previous years. But one thing you got to look at so far in this college football season is that this playoff is going to be very, very wide open. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I think a lot of people are going to look forward to it. I mean, you look at the four teams last year, and there really wasn't much of a conversation about much, you know, or much controversy, I guess I should say, about who are the four teams. I mean, you had Florida State undefeated with Jameis Winston. You had the Ducks with Marcus Mariota and their high-powered offense. You had Alabama, supposedly the best team in the country. And then the only kind of questionable pick was Ohio State. And that, of course, ended up to be not that questionable of a pick as they ended up winning the whole thing. But three of those four teams, I think, were pretty solid into the playoff. And I don't think that you can say the same thing right now. Absolutely not. I mean, you look at the top two teams in the country. You look at Ohio State and Michigan State, and both of those teams have not been very, I guess you can say, they just haven't looked like the dominant force that you expect like a top team to look like. I mean, Michigan State struggled past weekend against Purdue. Purdue? Wasn't the last time Purdue was relevant when Kyle Orton was playing quarterback for them? Like, oh my gosh. Like, plus it was at home at Spartan Stadium, and Purdue had a chance, had the last possession to either tie or win that ball game, and they had the ball in Michigan State territory. So it wasn't like they just, you know, Purdue had a very good chance to win. And also, I mean, look at Indiana. They had to play fourth and goal last play of the game to try to tie it up in regulation to either force their overtime, or they could have gone for two to go for the win against in Indiana's game against number one Ohio State. And Ohio State also looked shaky against Northern Illinois early this year. Against Virginia Tech, they looked shaky in the first half. It's just been, yeah, I don't know. You know, it's, you got a little bit of a quarterback controversy going on in Ohio State with JT Barrett and 12 Gauge battling it out there in Buckeye land. And I think part of it is that both of the quarterbacks are very good players, and I think that they're both putting a little bit too much pressure on each other. And, I mean, obviously, if you're going to play football and compete, you have to be a competitor and fight through some adversity. But, you know, you don't see Aaron Rodgers with Joe Flacco sitting on the bench either. You know, it's just not how things usually work in a locker room, in a football locker room. Sure, like, you want to fight for your job as a starting quarterback, but usually there's a much more pronounced difference between the starting quarterback and the backup. Even if there is a two-quarterback system like what we've seen the Oklahoma State Cowboys roll out this year, where it's you got one quarterback who's a thrower and one quarterback is a runner, or we saw early in Tim Tebow's career where Chris Leak was the starting quarterback and they'd bring Tim Tebow in those short yardage and quarterback run situations. You know, I can see where that's, you know, a difference with a two quarterback system. But, you know, that's because one quarterback has one strength over another quarterback. And that's not really the case here with Cardale Jones and JT Barrett. It's more about both of the quarterbacks being very, very good and having a lot of success. I mean, JT Barrett had a phenomenal regular season last year for the Buckeyes, and then Cardale Jones just throwing the ball over the field, running all over the Ducks defense in the national championship game, and, you know, Zeke Elliott and everything else with that team just put Cardale Jones on the map. And I think that's part of the problem with Ohio State right now. And, you know, a lot of people kind of saw it as a luxury, but I don't know how much of a luxury it is right now. I mean, obviously, it's great to have talented players like that on your team, but I'm not sure if JT Barrett or Cardale Jones has accepted their role as, you know, or accepted their roles, you know, as kind of a starting quarterback, but not solidly a starting quarterback. Because we all know if Cardale Jones continues to struggle a little bit, that Urban Meyer will pull him and put JT Barrett in. And is that something that a 20-year-old should be thinking about, you know? I mean, let's not forget, this is just a young kid. You know, he's not Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson. You know, he hasn't been there on those big stages like that for his whole life yet. You know, he's still just a kid, you know, in college. And sometimes I think people lose sight in that. And it's definitely going to be an interesting thing to watch, especially with the Big Ten having some teams in it that are competing that a lot of people didn't think were going to. I mean, look at the Iowa Hawkeyes. They went to Madison last weekend and beat the Badgers, a team they hadn't beat since 2009 when Micah Hyde was on the team, you know. And, you know, they had that great run to, I believe, a BCS game, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, but Iowa looked good. And also Northwestern, you know, they had that huge win in week one against Stanford. They've kept it going up to 16 in the polls. Iowa coming in ranked in the polls at number 22, first time they've been ranked since that 09 season. So a couple of interesting things to look at in that conference. We also have a big weekend coming up in the Big 12. Texas Longhorns, ouch. Another bad weekend for them as things just continue to spiral out of control. They lose 50-7. At least they didn't get skunked. But apparently they had guys tweeting at halftime about about possible transfers, and just later other tweets about guys calling other players out, and just so many problems with this Texas program right now. And I don't know who should shoulder most of the blame for this. I've said it before, I feel sorry for Charlie Strong. He's in such a terrible situation, and he just walked into such a horrible, horrible situation with what's going on in Austin. This was a program that was in shambles before. I mean, if Mac, think about it. Mac Brown was the one, last coach to get fired, right? And Mac Brown is probably the most noteworthy, I'd say, coach, you know, and cult hero in the history of Texas football. You ask any Texas football fan, and I'm sure that they will love Mac Brown. Mac Brown is a similar, I'd say, relationship with that program that Brett Favre has with the Green Bay Packers. Those two guys are just Mac Brown and Texas are just synonymous with each other. And, you know, things were getting ugly even for him when he was getting ready to leave Texas. And I think that was kind of a foreshadow for what Charlie Strong is going to have to deal with at Texas. And oof, he's got an uphill battle to fight. But the good part about it is that they're still the Texas Longhorns, and they're still the most powerful football program in terms of money in the country. So, heck, if Donald Trump can buy himself into a presidential race, I think Texas can buy themselves into the college football playoff picture as well. So, oh, that was kind of a zinger right there. But definitely, I mean, I think Texas can get off the schneid. I mean, this week's going to be tough playing against number 10 Oklahoma in the Red River rivalry, but if there's any game for a team like Texas to get up for, it's a game like this. It's a rivalry game. It's one of the most noteworthy games in college football, you know, one of storied rivalries. You know, so many famous players have played in it, you know, current NFL players, you know, Sam Bradford, DeMarco Murray, Jermaine Gresham, I mean, you just Kenny Stills. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on of all the great players, you know, Heisman Trophy winners and yada, yada, yada. They've played in this rivalry. So if you're Texas, you know, think, hey, it's a rivalry game. Anything can happen. You know, we just got to go out there and play as hard as we can. And if Texas is somehow able to get a win in this game, that would make Charlie Strong's hot seat all of a sudden. And it would go from, it would be like icy hot. It would be hot to dull the pain, and then a win would be cool to relax it away. It'd be like hot to cold, like instantly. So you never know what's going to happen. But the one matchup I'm really excited about for this weekend, there isn't a whole lot of really big matchups. And obviously, I mentioned Texas, Oklahoma, Florida State, and Miami. So all this week, also this weekend, it's one of those games that is more of a nostalgia game to this point. Miami lost last week to Cincinnati, so I'm not sure how good Miami is. Florida State's had their issues as well, but they definitely have been playing a little bit better, and I would think that Florida State should be able to handle the Hurricanes at home with Everett Golson and just that they're able to stay healthy. But anyway, the one game I'm most excited for this weekend is the local Cal Bears going up against the number 5 ranked Utah Utes, coming off their bye week after that huge win up in Eugene a couple weeks ago, up at Rice-Eccles Stadium in Salt Lake. It's going to be an interesting game, you know, because the Utes have obviously had an extra week to take a look at what the Bears are doing. But the Bears come in, I tell you what, this kid Jared Goff is probably the best quarterback in the conference right now, the Pac-12. He is playing absolutely phenomenal. The local kid from right here in Marin County, from Novato, California, played his high school football, won a state championship with, or went to, excuse me, went to the state championship with the Marin Catholic Cougars, and has been the starting quarterback since he was a freshman at Cal, and has, you know, has been stuck on a couple of really stinky teams his first year or two in college, and now in his third year, things are starting to click, and you know, he's got some talent around him, and that offensive system is finally starting to look like it's going to fit Jared Goff and the rest of that program well, and they picked up a big win on the road against Texas so far this year, and they were able to come from behind against a pesky Washington State Cougar team last week to pick up a win at Memorial Stadium. But this game is definitely the biggest test, I think, to this point for this Cal Bear team, and it's going to be all on the shoulders of Jared Goff, I think, and see what he can do. And Jared Goff is a guy who can do a lot of different things for you. I mean, obviously, he's a great thrower, and he's got a great arm, but he's also pretty athletic and can move around a little bit. You know, he's drawn a lot of Aaron Rodgers comparisons for obvious reasons, since both Rodgers and Goff have been linked to the same alma mater. Aaron Rodgers finished up college there at Cal after a two-year stint at Butte Community College, before, of course, being drafted number 23 overall by the Green Bay Packers. Sorry to all the 49er fans who made the who may still be sour over that. But yeah, but it should be an interesting one. Cal's defense has been the one thing that's been a little bit suspect this year. They gave up a lot of points to Texas in the fourth quarter. Washington State's offense was moving the ball pretty well against the Bears. So against a very, very good veteran offense like the Utes, Travis Wilson and Booker in the backfield, should be a tough one for the Bears this week. And one upset maybe to think about, Navy and Notre Dame will be, and also maybe Kansas State and TCU. TCU in another tough road test. They got through it 2 weeks ago at Texas Tech, playing Bill Schneider's team this week against Kansas State. Kansas State looked pretty good on the road this week, losing in a tough one to Oklahoma State, playing in a tough game on the road this week against West Virginia in Morgantown. We'll get to some of those picks later on in the show. Right now, we're going to head to our first break of the afternoon. You've been listening to Chalk Talk here on radio.dominican.edu. We'll be right back after these short messages.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov.
Take an ordinary putty knife and scrape off the old wax ring. Place the new wax ring over the flange, then line up the bolts with the bowl and gently set in place, making sure a proper seal is created with the flange and drain. Next,
Dad?
Yeah, sweetie.
Is that an old plumbing manual?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, honey.
We really need to get some new books.
Right, do you want me to stop?
Nah, I kinda wanna know how it ends.
Okay. Tighten the bolts, line up the flushing valve to the opening in the top of the bowl, and secure the tank with a screwdriver and crescent wrench.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
The show here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. You're listening to Chalk Talk here on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Jeff Safford, your host. I'd like to remind you that Uncovered with DJ Soundwave is coming up right after me. Her show will delve into YouTube cover artists. I've always thought that was a very interesting topic. Make sure you tune in to that one, again, from 5 to 6 p.m. here on Penguin Radio. And if you'd like to listen to our show, but you can't listen to it live, we have every show archived in podcast form on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. You can find all of our student show content and a bunch of other stuff as well, Penguin Athletics, seminars, and things that have been taped, lectures that have been taped on campus, a whole bunch of stuff right here on Penguin Radio. So we just got done with talking some college football, bunch of stuff going on over the weekend. Now we're going to move on to the big boys in the NFL. I guess we'll start with the game from last night, the Seahawks and the Lions. Oh boy. More fluky wins at CenturyLink Field. Man, I guess it's just kind of becoming a trend with the missed call last night. If you didn't see it, there was a play at the goal line. The Lions trailing 13-10 at that point. That ended up being the final score. But Calvin Johnson was going into the end zone, and Cam Chancellor punched the ball out. It was a great play by Cam Chancellor. You can't discount that to force that fumble at the goal line. I believe somebody said it was the first time in Calvin Johnson's career, or one of the first times in Calvin Johnson's career that he had fumbled in the red zone, which is kind of points to how good of a player he is, but certainly was an absolutely great play by Cam Chancellor to come from behind and punch that ball out, a la Charles Woodson, who really made that play famous with the Green Bay Packers. But anyway, so the ball is fumbled, and it goes towards the back of the end zone, and Kendall and Wright, the linebacker, comes over and tips the ball out of the back of the end zone. When one thing that kind of confused me is, why would he do that? He didn't need to. The ball was obviously looking like it was, the momentum was going to take it out of the back of the end zone, and even if it didn't, there was no player within 5 yards of the ball, so all Wright would have had to do is either A, let the ball by itself roll out the back of the end zone, or B, if the ball didn't roll out, just recover it and just sit on it in the end zone. You got a touchback anyway. But what he did do was, on purpose, beat the ball with his hand out of the back of the end zone, which should have been called as an illegal batting of the ball out of the back of the end zone, for lack of a better term for it. And the ball should have been given to the Lions inside the 1 yard line, first and goal, with a chance to take the lead. Oh boy. And to kind of add to the irony of this play, the play happened in the same end zone as the famous Fail Mary play that happened back in 2012 on another Monday night football game between the Packers and the Seahawks. That was pretty much the game that ended the strike with the officials. That was when the replacement refs were still in play. I'll always remember I was watching the week after that happened when the replacement refs were replaced by the real referees. Happened to be watching the Packers, and Jeff Triplett, a very popular NFL ref, I'm sure if you don't know his name, if you watch NFL football, you'll know who he is just because he's been refereeing in the NFL for over 20 years. But anyway, he was the referee for this Packer game, and when he came out of the tunnel for the first time that week after that Fail Mary play, he got a standing ovation from the Packer fans. Like, it was, I mean, as big of an ovation as Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, Bart Starr, any of those famous Packer players would get. It was for an official. I always just laugh at the irony of that. And then, of course, when Jeff Triplett called the play against the Packers, you know, 2 hours later, they were booing him. So, you know, right back to the old referee thing. But I don't know. But back to the Seahawks, it was just a, you know, one of those things. I heard Mike Pereira, the former NFL head of officials, talking about it on the radio today. He just said it was just an unfortunate lack of judgment by the referees, and that's how I see it as well. You know, it was just unfortunate that it happened that way, but it's one of those plays that Cam Chancellor did make a really special play on the ball. He forced the fumble, you know, and if you're Calvin Johnson, you know, you got to just say, hey, I got to do it myself. I can't put the referees in a position like that. And if you're the Lions, you got to think that way as well. And they got other problems with their team. I mean, they cannot run the football. And, you know, and this has been a problem for the Lions in the past, but they've kind of been able to hide it in a way and be able to scratch and claw just enough in the running game. And people were expecting a lot out of Amir Abdullah, and he hasn't really performed up to par. A lot of fantasy owners are pissed off about that. That's not really all that relevant. But it's the Lions just have a lot of trouble right now, and they're the only team in the NFL that's left still without a win, as they are sitting at 0-4. First time they have been 0-4 since 2010. That, of course, was the infamous 0-16 season by the Detroit Lions, where that was just a nasty year for them. I'm sure the Lions fans just want to forget about that. But, you know, this team, the Lions, they're just kind of a conundrum for me. They're, you know, I expected them to be a lot better, and they just haven't been to this point. And the running game has been a big reason why, and part of that is their offensive line. The pass protection hasn't really been all that great for Matthew Stafford either. So, team's got a lot of issues, and we'll see if they can pick up a win this week. And then the other kind of big story from around the league this week is kickers. What the heck was going on with NFL kickers? And it's been going on seemingly all season. I mean, we've seen franchises struggle with kickers, the Pittsburgh Steelers being one of the main ones that have struggled. The Jaguars also, another team that has struggled. But this week, and it was like a contagion. I don't know what it was. There were over 12 field goals in all. I think the final count of field goals missed this week was 14, which is a huge amount. And we just saw a number of really big kicks that were missed. I mean, two of them in Jacksonville with the Jaguars with a chance to beat the Colts, finally to end the Colts' 14-game streak in the AFC South in terms of conference victories. They were unable to do so. They had two chances to win the game. Really three, because the kick at the end of regulation, the 53-yarder that was missed by the Jaguars, he actually had two chances at it because the Colts tried to ice, and Chuck Pagano tried to ice the Jacksonville kicker at the very last second. So he kicked it, missed it, but the kick didn't count because the Colts called timeout, so they line it up again, and then he kicks it and misses it again. It's like, oh boy. And then And then the Jaguars had a chance to win it again. Much more makeable kick the second time. I believe it was like a 45-yarder or something like that, and pulled it to the left. And after that, then the Colts just marched right down the field and lined Vinatieri up from about 35 yards, and he was able to not be infected by the contagion. But, man, a lot of missed kicks yesterday or on Sunday. Mason Crosby missed one. Well, the Chargers got lucky where their kicker missed would have been a game-winning kick. But of all things, the Cleveland Browns were offside on the play, which is kind of a, you know, if you're the coach, you're probably thinking he wants to rip his hair out. It's like, ugh. But he gets a second chance and knocks it through the second time after the penalty. So the Chargers able to get a win. The New Orleans Saints plunked a game winner off the left upright from 30 yards out. The chance to win that one in regulation. They obviously were able to make amends with C.J. Spiller scoring on a long touchdown from Drew Brees. Congratulations, Drew Brees. 400th career touchdown pass and a great Hall of Fame career so far for the New Orleans Saints quarterback. He's just been fantastic. And you're just looking at his numbers and who he's stacked up against in his, you know, stacking right up against, you know, the Bradys, the Mannings, the Aaron Rodgerses of the world. And to me, he is definitely a Hall of Famer. And even though the things haven't been going that great, you know, in recent years for the Saints, he's continuing to perform well and just do his thing. And, you know, that's definitely something to be said. And Saints now sit at 1-3 and have the vast majority of their AFC South matchups ahead of them. So they still definitely have a lot of time to improve. The one thing that they definitely should look to improve is get that running game going a little bit more with Mark Ingram and just get some more people involved. And looking, you know, we talked about a few of the undefeated teams earlier. We'll list out the teams that are left. The Lions mentioned are the only 0-4 team left, but the Patriots, who had a bye week, are undefeated. The Falcons, who just destroyed the Houston Texans this week. That was a little bit of an embarrassing game for the Texans. Ryan Mallett hasn't really been able to do too much. He got pulled in the second half of that one for Brian Hoyer. And now both quarterbacks have been pulled in games, and it looks like to this point that quarterback experiment is not going to work. And maybe Ryan Fitzpatrick was a little bit more important than they let on. He's been able to lead the Jets to a pretty good start so far this year. They're sitting at 3-1, the first time they've been that good record-wise since 2010. That was one of the years that the Jets made it to the AFC Championship game. They made it to the AFC Championship game twice, once in 2009 and 2010 under Rex Ryan and Mark Sanchez at quarterback. So good start for them. But back to the undefeated, the Patriots, the Falcons, who destroyed Texans, the Green Bay Packers, and also the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers, man, that's a very kind of interesting team, because you look at how, you know, they just didn't have that much depth at the running back or the wide receiver position. It was a big question coming into this year, but Cam Newton has just kind of been able to make it work so far. I mean, just finding guys, you know, making plays. You know, last week it was Greg Olsen having a big game, and this week it was all about Ted Ginn Jr., who caught two touchdown passes from big Cam Newton. And this point in the year with the players he has around him, you know, and he hasn't really gotten a whole lot out of Jonathan Stewart to this point this year either, who is expected to have a pretty good year, especially without D'Angelo Williams around. But he hasn't had a big year, but you got to think, for four games, got to at least put him in the conversation, Cam Newton, as an MVP choice. And I'm being absolutely serious. I mean, think about who he has around him. I mean, you got Ted Ginn Jr. is your number two receiver, and I can't even, you know, Benjamin is injured, their number one receiver, and Greg Olsen, the tight end, is definitely your number one target. You know, there's just not a lot of weapons with Newton to work with, and he is still able to lead this offense, and they're undefeated and making all these big plays and just continuing to win ball games. That defense is one of the strengths of the team, but still, without old number one, I don't know how well this team would be working right now. And that's probably the most important thing when you look at an MVP is, you know, what has he done for your squad? How important is he to your team? And it is obvious to me that Cam Newton is the heartbeat to that football team. And it really points to how far this kid has come. I mean, I was doubting him big time when he came out of Auburn. He seemed like kind of a prima donna, a little bit of a hothead, you know, had some problems at the University of Florida before he went to Auburn. That whole thing of how he ended up at Auburn was kind of shady, but we're not going to get into that right now. And, you know, he just had a lot of questions about him, but he's been able to mature a little bit, and really he's been a great leader for this ball club, and I think he's proven a lot of people wrong. And, you know, his big reason for their success. And the other quarterback, I think, has been really surprising in how well he's performed is Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton has been absolutely fantastic this year. He has been one of the guys that has been much maligned. I mean, everybody was talking about how he hasn't won a playoff game and how he can't step up in those big moments. But so far this season, Andy Dalton has just been fantastic. He's been very precise in his decision-making, making the right reads, throwing it to the right guys, you know, being very aggressive as well, you know, attacking down the field. And when you got a bunch of receivers, when you got Mohamed Sanu and you got A.J. Green and you got Tyler Eifert, you know, you got these great weapons, you go out there and use them and you attack them down the field. That's the team's strength, and that's what he's done. To this point, he's averaging over 10 yards a completion, and nobody has done that in the NFL since the year 2000. And that was the season that Kurt Warner and the St. Louis Rams, that's the man who did it, Kurt Warner and the St. Louis Rams, they were the greatest show on turf, and they won the Super Bowl against the Tennessee Titans. Dude, am I going to compare the Cincinnati offense to the greatest show on turf? No, but they do have some similarities when you look at them. They have the talented receivers. You know, when you look at that Rams team, Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce, the Cincinnati Bengals have A.J. Green and Mohamed Sanu. Maybe not quite as good of a tandem as those two, as those two will probably both be Hall of Famers. You got Marshall Faulk in their backfield. The Bengals have Jeremy Hill. A little bit different running styles for those two backs, but they also have Giovanni Bernard, the Cincinnati product, in the backfield as well. Oh, wait, that's not right. Giovanni Bernardi went to NC State. My bad. Anyway. But it's, you know, it's interesting to look at the similarities between the two teams. Both teams also had a very good offensive line, and both teams also had great defenses. So it's kind of interesting looking at the similarities between those two teams. They do play different styles, but they have some of the similar, I guess you could say, elements in their team that make them good. But still, I would definitely say the two teams that are the class of the NFL right now are the New England Patriots and the Green Bay Packers. They've been that way since the beginning of the season. I still definitely feel that they're the two best teams. Pats had a bye this week, were unable to flex their muscles, but Green Bay absolutely did. And the one area where they looked really scary, and I think a lot of teams should be scared of, is how good their defense looked. And man, they were just all over Colin Kaepernick and the San Francisco 49ers. The 49ers, of course, have a lot of their own issues, but especially for looking that good against a quarterback who had given the Packers so much trouble over the previous couple of years in playoffs and regular season, it was definitely a good sign for the Packer defense that they're able to put some pressure on the quarterback, get an interception. The Packers' turnover margin in general is absolutely off the charts. They have yet to commit a turnover this year, interception or a fumble. So it's just been a great team effort all around for the Packers, especially when you look at what they've been dealing with injuries and suspensions as well. You know, you look at this team and where they're at and where they could be headed, and it looks like a pretty scary matchup. And on the other side, the Niners, the local team here in the one of the local teams here in the Bay Area, things just do not looking very good for the Niners right now. A lot of people pointing the finger at Colin Kaepernick. You know, he had a pretty rough day. Had Clay Matthews mocking him multiple times. I'm sure Green Bay Packers fans really liked that little mock Kaepernick celebration where he kissed his bicep. I'm sure they really appreciated that. And he had to deal with cascading boos from the crowd there at Levi's Stadium. I always want to say Candlestick, but Levi's Stadium. And it's just the offensively is where the problem is, and that's really a big issue. And I heard Troy Aikman talking about it during the broadcast, that the defense really couldn't have done much better against an offense like the Packers. They were able to hold Aaron Rodgers seemingly in check. I mean, he wasn't going absolutely ballistic in that game, and for the majority of the game at least kept him in it. And the final score tells you that. The final score is only 17-3. So if the Niners were able to get anything going offensively, a touchdown, you know, maybe a couple field goals, that game probably would have been pretty competitive. And, you know, it's just, I don't know what the main problem is with the 49ers offense. They can't run the football. That's one thing that's a little bit concerning. They don't have the weapons in the passing game, or they do have, or Colin Kaepernick just can't get him the ball. But you look at the problems with this team, and I've said before, I don't think Colin Kaepernick was the best option at quarterback. I think they should have stuck with Alex Smith, and that's definitely one skeleton that Jim Harbaugh left in the closet with this team that you can definitely say, because Kaepernick was Harbaugh's guy. You know, for whatever reason, Harbaugh just gravitated to Kaepernick, and he liked him. That was his guy, and, you know, it was his team, so he was the one that made the decision, and, you know, but now he's not here. He's coaching the 22-ranked Michigan Wolverines, and now they're stuck with him. But the one silver lining you got to look at with Kaepernick is that they're not going to have to be on the hook for a lot of the money that they gave him in the offseason. So, but you never want to have to think about replacing what they thought was going to be a franchise quarterback, and that might be what the 49ers will have to do. The 49ers will go on the road this week to play against the New York Football Giants, as they look to be one of the teams to beat in the AFC East, with the struggles of all the teams in the East, obviously with the Cowboys and the missing Tony Romo and the struggles with the Eagles. DeMarco Murray has, in the games that he's played in, he has less than 50 yards total in rushing so far. Ugh, man, that just tells you how bad that marriage has been going so far, and got a lot of people asking questions. And the Redskins are sitting at 2-2, the Giants 2-2, so everybody's pretty much in it so far in that division. That's definitely going to be an interesting battle to watch, to see which mediocre team can end up being the best of the bunch, so to speak. But we're going to take another quick break here on this edition of Chalk Talk. You're listening to Chalk Talk on radio.dominican.edu. And we come back, we're going to do some picks for both college and the NFL. And then we are going to get out of here, as Uncovered with DJ Soundwave is coming up in just about 10 minutes. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Bill Pazinski, I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. The difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. Studies prove that reading to a child regularly dramatically improves reading skills. And kids who read well by third grade are four times as likely to graduate. So United Way is calling for 1 million volunteers over the next 3 years. We're asking you to step up, make a pledge, tutor a child who needs help, mentor a kid who needs someone on their side, volunteer to read to children, make a difference. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Entire communities improve. The path to success or failure starts long before graduation day. And the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Be a reader, tutor or mentor, give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Take the pledge. Go to liveunited.org now. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Coming back with a little Dr. Dre right there. So we're at the end of our show. Like I mentioned before the break, make sure you stay tuned for DJ Soundwave and Uncovered. Coming up in about just about a little bit under 10 minutes now. We're at 4:52 local time here on Penguin Radio. Her show will be from 5 to 6 p.m. here. And make sure you also check out all the other great DJs here on Penguin Radio and all of their shows that have been archived on our website at radio.dominican.edu. All right, so let's get to some picks. All right, how's that sound? Pretty good, right? Yeah. Let's start with college football. I guess we'll start with a Thursday matchup. Why not? The USC Trojans facing off against the Washington Huskies. That game is played in Los Angeles, and for that reason, I will definitely have to go with the Trojans. I'd maybe be thinking upset if the game was in Seattle. Husky Stadium is a very tough place to play. I know that from experience. I've been there before. It's loud. It's ruckus. I mean, when you see on TV when the cameras shake, it's for real. The stadium really does shake. It's a kind of a crazy phenomenon, but they're not playing there, so for that reason I like Cody Kessler and USC Trojans. Vegas has about a 17 point favorite. I'm gonna go a little higher than that. I'm gonna say Trojans 31 and the Huskies 10 for that one. Moving on to Saturday afternoon contests. LSU going on the road to face South Carolina. Head ball coach, I mean, his squad is not the best that we have seen from the head ball coach. They're coming in with a 2-3 record, but you got to believe that Steve Spurrier is going to have that team ready to play. So for that reason, I think that game was going to be closer than a lot of people may think. But in the end, Leonard Fournette, the Heisman candidate, and the LSU Tigers, I think, will have enough to win in Columbia. Red River rivalry, Oklahoma and Texas. I think this game might be close for a while just because of it being a rivalry game, and both teams are going to be pretty jacked up for that one. You might see a little bit of jitters on both sides. You know, in a lot of big games, sometimes you see some turnovers early, or you see, you know, just lack, you know, not much of anything, some three and outs, just slow starts. But in the end, I think Oklahoma is just the better team and just in a better position psychologically. And when you're playing in a game that's a big one like this, you know, a team that has the mental edge is a huge advantage, you know, in a game that has a lot of emotion in it. So I'm going to take Boomer Sooner in that one. And one of the marquee SEC games, Georgia going on the road to face the Tennessee Volunteers. Georgia dropping all the way to 19 after that thumping they had at Sanford Stadium last week. I think they have a good chance to get back on the horse, so to speak. And if they want to make it to the SEC championship game, they better make sure that they win this one, because they definitely do not want to fall into a hole with two SEC losses with a game against Florida coming up. They have been trailing by two games, playing Florida. You know, a loss to Florida could pretty much end your season, where if you keep the win streak going, you can be still right in the thick of things in the SEC East. Another game to look at, a very interesting one on the Big Ten Network, kind of an obscure network, didn't really hit on it much. I talked a little bit about Northwestern and their early success, but Northwestern, the number 13 team ranked in the nation, headed to Ann Arbor to face Jim Harbaugh and the 18th ranked, I said 22 ranked earlier, that was my mistake, they're ranked 22 last week. This week they are ranked 19th, the Michigan Wolverines. Michigan favored by 7.5, and this is probably one of Northwestern's toughest tests, and you know, Northwestern does not have that great of a history in the Big House, and you know, I mean, Northwestern football doesn't have that great a history to begin with, but I think this is a game that could be season defining for both teams, really. I mean, you look at Michigan, if they pick up a win, a big win here, they got a big one coming up against Michigan State at home in the Big House. If they win that one, they'll give them some momentum going into that big game. If Northwestern wins, then they keep the undefeated season alive, and they, you know, continue this kind of dream season. And sometimes, you know, you see in college football, you see a little magic. And if Northwestern is able to win this one, then they're going to be able to, you know, they will be kind of the darling, I would say, of college football. And you know what? I'm calling the upset. I'm taking the Wildcats this weekend, because sometimes there is just a team in college football that's just kind of the team of destiny. And I think this team could be it. Why not? Then a couple other games real quick. I'll take the Seminoles over the Hurricanes. And I will take Utah Utes over the California Golden Bears. So there's some picks in the NCAA. Moving on to the NFL for this coming week. A couple of interesting games on the slate. Start Bengals and Seahawks. I like Cincinnati at home. Marshawn Lynch didn't play last week, and even if he's in the lineup next week, probably will not be 100%. The Bengals are just overall, I'd say, a better team right now. Not sure if that's going to be the case at the end of the season, but the Bengals are playing as good as anybody right now, and I don't think that the Seahawks can say that. There's definitely teams that are playing better than them right now, and they've had some problems. Pass protection is one big problem, and when you're going on the road, that might, you know, pass protection can be a big issue. So when you're dealing with crowd noise and everything else, just makes it that much more difficult. And so I like the Bengals at home to improve to 5-0. Looking at another undefeated team, the Falcons playing at home against the Redskins. I think this game actually has a chance to be closer than a lot of people may think. The Redskins, kind of low-key, have one of the best run defenses in the conference, in the NFC, and with the Falcons' success running the ball with Devontae Freeman, he has 7 touchdowns already, and nobody had more. Here's an interesting stat. The Falcons last year combined had 6 rushing touchdowns, and Devontae Freeman through 4 games already has 7. So kind of a big stat there. This is going to be a tough game, but I think Matt Bryant kicks a game-winning field goal. Matty Ice leads a last-second drive like he's done so many times and the Falcons will come up with a victory. Another interesting game, the Browns and the Ravens. The Ravens didn't even get a win. The Browns have not looked bad. Josh McCown had a pretty good game last Sunday against the Chargers. And I think that the Browns have a good chance to pull the upset in this one. That's going to be my upset pick this week. I'm going to take the Browns over the Ravens for the Browns to improve to 2-3. How about that? And then one last one to look at before we go, the Patriots and the Cowboys. Pat's coming off their bye week. And we all know how good the Patriots are coming off of a bye week. I mean, at this point, I feel like Bill Belichick could probably finish Brandon Wheaton's sentences so for how much he's studied him. And so I expect the Patriots to be extremely ready to go against a wounded Dallas Cowboy team, even though it is in Dallas. I expect the Patriots to roll by double digits and for them to improve to 4-0. All right, well, that's going to be our show for this afternoon. I want to thank everybody out there for tuning in. Uncovered with DJ Soundwave is coming up next. This was Chalk Talk. I'm Jeff Safford, and have a great afternoon, everybody.